Welcome to Social Distance Central. Wait, that's what this is now? You're on Sportsnet 650. Here's Bick Nizar and Brendan Batchelor.
Welcome to Social Distance Central, the show with the COVID name. It's not about COVID. During the COVID era, I am Bick Nizar. And with me, your voice of your Vancouver Canucks on Sportsnet 650, it's Brendan Batchelor. Batch, how's it going?
It's going well. Getting fired up here Friday afternoon and training camp coming next week. So we actually get some hockey specific news to sink our teeth into starting on Monday. Should be really exciting and a pretty quick run up to exhibition games, you know, in about 2 weeks from now.
Man, it's finally here. It's finally here. I'm shaking in excitement that we finally made it. Hockey training camp going to be here very quickly. And yeah, those games, man, it's stunning to think how quickly it's going to be here. And we're starting to do a bit of a series here on Social Distance Central. We're going to start previewing these series. So we've got a couple of guests coming on today to talk about the Penguins Habs series. Josh Getzoff's going to join us, Penguins play-by-play, and also Stu Cowan from the Montreal Gazette. So we'll have them on in the back end of the show and get ready for, you know, the series that got used a lot as the reason not to do this COVID Cup. It was like, well, what if the Penguins get knocked off by the Montreal Canadiens? How bad is it that a 5 seed won't go to the playoffs? So we're going to start there. I don't know, Price versus Crosby, all of that. And we'll work our way through these series as we get ready for August 1st.
Yeah, and you know, this is a compelling series to discuss. We got into it a little bit when we had Colby Armstrong on the show a few weeks ago, but you know, we'll get the perspectives of both Josh in Pittsburgh and Stu in Montreal and try and see if this series is not quite as much of a guarantee as many would think. And certainly in this playoff year, specifically with COVID-19 happening, no fans in the stands, hub cities, all of it, I would imagine we're more likely to see upsets than maybe we would in a normal playoff year. So, you know, that's a question I want to put to both of these guys is, do they think the Canadians have a chance to be one of those teams that is a big upset winner and is able to move on?
650 with your thoughts as well. Oh, and we're going to be doing Game of Takes today as well. We'll have to tell you about a bit of a change, but that's coming up in about 10 minutes. But we should note today, it's I feel like we need Survivor music. It's people are making their votes. So the votes will be announced later today. It's Ratification Friday, Batch. The player voting has been going on for a few days. On the new CBA and the return to play everything and accelerating into phase 3 and 4. Expected later in the evening that we'll find out what the vote is and confirmation from all parties involved that, hey, we have labor peace for the next 6 years. So, you know, we were going to do this when the vote started on Wednesday, just kind of talking through the players' angle from this and benefits for them and how to get through this. But today's the day. We find out today, Batch.
Yeah, it sounds like, as I understand it, the Board of Governors are likely meeting right now, and they'll be making their decision on whether to ratify this new memorandum of understanding for a collective bargaining agreement and the return to play format, which, you know, if you hadn't realized that listening right now, those two things are tied together. It's not a separate vote for the return to play and the CBA. It's, do you accept the whole package, which is the 4-year CBA extension plus the return to play format this year with the hub cities, or do you reject all of it? Which, you know, certainly we expect the Board of Governors to ratify this because, you know, it'd be pretty unprecedented for them to go against Gary Bettman and what he wants to do and what he is recommending to them. But the players' vote is more up in the air. It's less predictable because, you know, whether it's the CBA, whether it's the return to play, whether you're worried about the risk of COVID, whether you're worried about anything that goes into the return to play, or you don't like something with the way they've agreed to calculate escrow or anything like that. All it takes is one reason through all of those details for someone to potentially vote no. So, you know, I still believe that the players will approve this this vote that they're taking right now, that they'll approve a return to play and approve for additional years of labor peace on top of the 2 years remaining in the current agreement. But I don't think it'll be anything close to unanimous. And whether we learn that information in terms of percentages, how many players voted in favor, how many players voted against, is going to be interesting. But the fact that there could be a sizable group of players that don't vote in favor of this for a variety of different reasons is something that I find fascinating, that there's going to be a group of players out there that say, it's not worth it for my own personal health and the risk of contracting COVID to come back and play. And then there are going to be other players that have issues with the collective bargaining agreement and things that have been negotiated in that are also going to want to vote no. The question is, will all that amount to 51% of the vote, or is it going to be a minority? I tend to believe it will be a minority, but the question is how large.
Yeah, and the layers to this, obviously there's this vote, and then 3 days after, the players will have their deadline to opt out. So I'm curious, like, again, I believe this will go through overwhelmingly, but for those that dissent and for those that vote no for this, will they then exercise their opportunity by Monday to say, you know what, actually, I'm not comfortable. I said my piece in the vote. I understand it goes through all of that, but I'm still not comfortable going through. And we've heard, you know, we played the clip from Bohorvat yesterday that it never really occurred to him to opt out. It was never a desire on his part to opt out and not be here for his teammates. So I feel like I would be surprised if someone opt out, but I'm keeping my mind open to it.
Yeah, and you know there are guys out there that have, you know, more definitive and understandable reasons to opt out than someone like Bo Horvat, who certainly, as we talked to him yesterday, is going through a tough time right now. He had to leave his newborn son at just a week old to return, and he's away from his family and missing them a lot right now. But you know, you look around the league, and you know this is something we can ask Stu Cowan later on in the show. Max Domi has type 1 diabetes. Is that something that's going to put him at a greater risk than other players? Could he be a guy that potentially opts out? What about Brian Boyle? What about Phil Kessel? Guys that have had cancer in the past. So, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if there are some players that opt out. I wouldn't expect it to be a large number. And, you know, I agree with you when you say that I think the players will vote, you know, massively in favor of this return to play, but how big of an endorsement will it be? Are we talking 95% of players are in favor of it? Are we talking 75? Are we talking 65? Right.
And to be fair, voting yes doesn't mean it's like, oh, this is a great idea, right? Because there are stark realities facing these players if they reject this. Because if they reject it, like all this work that we've done to now is moot, right? Like, there's no conclusion to the season if they reject this today.
Yeah, there's a major economic hit that the league takes because they've planned for this whole return to play. There's TV rights money that's tied up in these playoffs being completed. And all of these things become a factor if the players vote against it. So there's too much financial incentive for the players to go against this in my mind. And that's why we're both saying we think that this is going to be endorsed by the players and probably with a pretty good mandate. But again, what do you consider a good mandate? You know, 75% certainly, you know, is the majority of players by a long shot saying we want to come back and play and we approve this. But that's still 25% of your membership that would then be saying we don't like some element of this agreement. And that's if we get that information later today, that's what I'm going to be most interested to see is, you know, what percentage of the players association is in favor of this return. But again, as I was saying off the top, there are so many details and so much to wade through in terms of, you know, changes with the CBA. The free agent negotiating period that we've seen over the last few years is going to be gone. So we're going to be back to tampering, essentially, for teams leading into free agency. They're not going to have that period to talk to guys leading up to July 1st or, you know, whatever the date's going to be in October that they're going to conduct free agency this year. So there are lots of little details and minutiae in both the CBA and the return to play, and any one of those details could be impactful to a particular player depending on his particular situation.
And the thing that sets up for the players, like we've talked about the league's point of view of, hey, the reason they're going ahead with this plan is primarily motivated by finances, right? They want to, you know, generate revenue for the NHL, and that's valid and that's fair. The motivation for the players to accept this deal is kind of rooted in the same idea. And we've talked about it, the numbers that happen if they reject it and if they don't come back to play. They're looking at, for next season, you know, we've heard the numbers range from $66 million cap to $63 million cap, so around there. So it's a $18 million drop. And then escrow rates are going to skyrocket as well, somewhere between 50 to, I mean, we've even heard 70%. So this is the reality we live in is not great, and it's same for the players. Their business is taking a huge hit, so this is trying to salvage a bad situation, and it's not great options, but it's better than the alternative. And I think that's why I kind of think overwhelmingly this vote will go through, because the motivations on the players' behalf is to save themselves for 2 years from now, 3 years from now, because the ramifications, if you don't take care of this now, will speak for a while. It could set the league back 6 years, basically.
Well, and actually, if you look at the escrow, that's one area that I think the players will be in favor of this agreement, because it's going to be capped.
Yes.
So escrow is going to be capped at 20% next season, between 14 and 18% the season after, depending on economic factors and hockey-related revenue, would go down to 10% in 22-23, and then 6% for the rest of this labor deal. So, you know, the fact that these players know, you know, with a reasonable amount of certainty how much of their money they're going to get in each of the next few seasons and how much of it is going to be swallowed up in escrow is something that, you know, when it gets down to 6% in the later part of those deals, yeah, maybe you're taking, you know, taking a little bit more off your paycheck right now than you would want in the immediate future at 20% next year. But, you know, that should in turn allow the league to stabilize economically. And then when you get to the end of this deal, it's only 6% that you're losing. So the fact that that's capped, the fact that those numbers are negotiated and agreed upon in this deal, to me is something that is, you know, important for the players and a reason that they will vote in favor rather than against.
It's Bick Nizar and Brendan Batchelor here on Social Distance Central on the home of the Canucks. Okay, you know, we do it every week. It's our new favorite segment. And to steal a line from Dan Riccio, the bit that is sweeping the nation with Game of Takes.
When you play the Game of Takes,
winter is coming.
You either win.
The lion doesn't concern himself with the opinions of the sheep.
Or, well, you know.
Dracarys.
Rally the realm and make your claim to the composite throne. Here's Bick.
I drink, and I know things.
And Batch.
You know nothing, Jon Snow.
Valar Morghulis.
All right, we know who won last week. Big shout out to Nick Dragon for winning the Game of Takes last week. But we got some news, Batch.
Breaking news in Game of Takes land, unprecedented developments here
today.
We've
never seen this before. There's so much battling to get to the composite throne, but the breaking news is Nick couldn't be reached for comment.
He's abdicated the throne.
Abdicated. The pressure was too much, and he relinquished. So what we have today are two new competitors. We haven't had this since the start. So this is exciting. There's no defending the throne. There's no, you know, close call. There's no perks for a champion. So This is uncharted territory.
Yes, we'll have a new champion on Game of Takes this week, which is exciting. Certainly, we've seen the composite throne turned over multiple times to different competitors throughout the last couple of months.
Trying to think
we're doing this now.
All our champions. We've had Bailey. We've had Chris. We've had Ty. We've had Nick, obviously. So many people have come and gone. Nobody has relinquished the throne, but it has happened now. So our two competitors who are champing at the bit to sit atop the composite throne, we got Malcolm and we got Jeremy, who, you know, we had this debate all last week. Team tank or team win? Basically, team playoffs or team draft? What are you doing? So we turned it over to you this week and we asked you, hey, what side are you on? Playoffs or draft? And these guys brought their takes. I think even Malcolm was tweeting Finn, who was tweeting us, of course you go for it. So we go to Malcolm Ert. You can follow him on Twitter, at Malcolm Ert, part of the Area 51 podcast. Here he is in his Game of Takes for Team Draft.
No one is suggesting the boys should lose these games on purpose. But if this city wants to drink from Lord Stanley's cup, they need to realize the road to success isn't straight up. This is about being prudent and building a cup contender, not a playoff contender. Due to poor cap management and an attempt to retool on the fly, we still have significant pieces of our army yet to build. The cupboards are not full. In fact, they're practically empty on defense. The first overall pick in such an incredible draft changes our franchise overnight in ways no other single transaction can. Yes, we only have a 12.5% chance at that first pick, but we have a much less chance at winning the actual Stanley Cup. Betting sites have us at 1%. Even if we don't win the lottery, we most likely pick in the 10 to 12 range, which will be an incredible player in this year's NHL draft, one probably only a full year away from playing. If we beat Minnesota, we're very likely to lose to whoever we play next. That results in no draft pick until the second half of the third round. For where we are as a franchise, we simply can't afford that. Once our top players are paid like top players, inserting capable top six forwards and top four defensemen on entry-level contracts will become paramount to our future success. So I encourage you all, don't be short-sighted. Think about the entire span of Hughes and Petey's career and ask yourself, would I rather a 1% chance at the cup this year or a very legitimate chance for the next 10 plus?
Bringing the heat.
And you know what? For Team Tank, as they like to be called, or Team Playoffs, or Team Draft, rather, yeah, whatever we're going to refer to them as, that is a very rational and reasoned take. You know, I like that he starts off saying, no one's saying they should try to lose, right? But the fact remains, and I've said this in the past, you know, the number one ultimate result, if you're ranking the ways you want this season to go, certainly number one on that list is the Stanley Cup.
Yeah.
But number two on that list is the number one overall draft pick.
Oh, see, right? I would take losing in the Stanley Cup above that.
Okay. Well, okay, let's say getting to the Stanley Cup final is number one on that list.
Sure.
And then if you win or you lose. But to me, number two on that list is still Alexi Lafreniere. And that's not to say that there wouldn't be a ton of value from winning a round or two and getting more playoff experience for these young players. But if we're just talking about upside over the long term for this franchise, certainly winning a Stanley Cup or having a chance to win a Stanley Cup is right at the top of that list. And then the very next thing is getting the best player available in the draft so that you give yourself a better chance to win a Stanley Cup in the years to come. So I understand it from that perspective. Where you lose me on it is the 12.5% chance. Like if everything had worked out perfectly and three placeholder teams had been number one, number two, and number three overall, and we could have said that you have like a 35% chance of picking in the top three, that gives you a little bit of pause and that gives you time to think. And even if it's not Lafreniere, it could be Byfield or someone like that. So, you know, but that's a real percentage chance, right? Like we're talking about, you know, a 1 in 3 chance of picking in the top three if you lose. 12% to me just isn't enough to make that a rational argument. Whereas, you know, the way I look at it, and I assume that this is what we're going to hear in our next Game of Take submission, is, you know, you want the team to win, and hey, if the consolation prize is first overall pick, that's a pretty good scenario too.
I'll keep saying this. Team Tank just needs a better marketer. That's really about it. It's got to be called Team Draft, because it's right. It's like no one's attempting to lose these games. And if you frame it as Team Draft, I think a lot more people would understand and be on board. But let's hear the inverse as we continue with our Game of Takes and these great competitors. It's Jeremy Baramee. You can follow him on Twitter at AirDrFunk. Here he is for Team Playoffs.
Ladies and gentlemen, and anyone in between outside the gender spectrum listening to this, have we been so blinded by the lack of regular season success since 2015 that we're completely missing the forest for the trees? Have we forgotten what the goal of the season for any NHL team should be? It's not the chance to get the highest draft pick possible. It's all about getting a chance to heft that glorious 35-pound amalgamation of silver and nickel in the air. I'm talking about the Stanley Cup, people! Well, getting the first overall pick would be a boon to the franchise. The chance to get that pick is merely a consolation prize for losing the first round of the playoffs. Oh, since the new CBA sets the stats for the round robin and playing rounds count for the 2020 playoffs, I'm calling them playoffs. That first overall pick is a morsel to tantalize losing teams, like a meat treat dangled above the head of a voracious pug. And after 50 years of the Canucks getting shafted by the draft lottery, I'm not going to put my faith in a 12.5% chance now. Look, the Canucks have Elias Pettersson, who broke Peter Effin Forsberg's records in the SHL. The Canucks have Quinn Hughes, who joined the ranks of Brian Leetch and Bobby freaking Orr by leading the rookies in scoring this season. The Canucks have Bo Horvat, a natural leader who wants to put his baby boy in the cup. The Canucks have Jacob Markstrom, a goalie who, depending on which fancy stats you subscribe to, is a top 5 goalie in the NHL. And of course, who could forget about the unsung hero himself, JT Miller? At what point do we say, this is a good group of guys, let them fight for the prize? And for those worried about draft picks, here's something to consider. Would it be better to potentially send an unprotected first to New Jersey next year, or drive down the value of the first round pick given to them this year as much as possible? This should not be a hard decision. Go Canucks, go!
From Jeremy Baramee. You can follow him on Twitter at AirDrFunk. Follow Malcolm at MalcolmErt, part of that Area 51 crew. Man, a lot of, man, like, that's
strong
tough.
Takes this week.
That's tough. I, like, my own personal opinion is, like, just go win. The culture is too important to, you know, not get in that mindset of being a losing franchise. You got to start spinning that around. But, you know, I'm evaluating who had the best take batch. I think it's pretty close. I think this is really close.
And again, we encourage you to vote on the take you think is strongest.
Yes. Not Don't validate your own opinion.
Your predisposed opinion. And where I think, and I have just cast my vote on Twitter. You can go and do it now at Sportsnet650 as well. I'm coming out and saying I cast my vote for Jeremy. And here's why. Because he makes a very good point for those of you who are listening who are on Team Draft or Team Tank right now at the very end of his take. What would be better? You know, giving up an unprotected draft pick next year and potentially having that come back to burn you? Or win as much as you can this year, drive down the value of that pick, and then you can look back at the JT Miller trade and see it as more of a positive. That's an element that I haven't heard argued to this point in such a clear and concise way as Jeremy put it. I think that makes a lot of sense.
I'm going to have to re-listen, and I will cast my vote, which you can now at Sportsnet650 on Twitter, and jump online and submit your vote. And if you want to rehear the takes, we post up videos as well, and so you can have a listen. So go cast your vote, and we'll reveal the winner on Monday. On the way here on Social Distance Central, we're going to preview the Habs and Pens series. Going to talk to Josh Getzoff and Stu Cowan coming up in moments on the home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650. Central here on Sportsnet 650, the home of your Vancouver Canucks, Vic Nizar and Brendan Batchelor. Game of Takes is now open. Jump online at Sportsnet 650 on Twitter. Cast your vote for either Malcolm or Jeremy. As we mentioned earlier, sorry, go ahead.
I'm just going to say there's another poll we need you to cast your vote for as well. We can get into this later. I'm fired up. Let's go, Vic.
Yeah, we'll touch on that on the back end of the segment here, because yes, we do require your votes for that as well. But we do want to start talking about the other series as we get ready for return to play, assuming this vote goes through, as we mentioned earlier, on ratification Friday. So let's start talking about these play-in series. So joining us now is Josh Getzoff, who's part of the Penguins broadcast, to preview the Penguins and Habs series. We'll talk to Stu Cowan in just a minute, but Josh joins us now. Josh, first off, how have you been keeping, and is everything well?
Everything is well, guys. Hope the same for you, too. Thanks a lot for having me on. And how I've been keeping, attempting to stay active. It's been about 100 degrees for five straight days in Pittsburgh, so it's that kind of heat that like melts you when you walk outside, so that's been a little hard. But Ozark, Netflix, that's been kind of the calling card here lately.
Good to hear. Okay, as we get ready for this series, what excites you the most for how the Penguins can get on top of the Canadiens? Like, what to you is going to be the key part of this team outside of Crosby and Malkin?
Sure. Well, I think when anyone looks at the Penguins, the way they finished this year, I mean, you see them in the top five in the East, a top-tier team in the NHL, which they've been come to known as here over the last decade plus with the core that they've had. But with the gap that there's been, I think a lot of things have been lost sight of, and one of them being that the Penguins did all that this year largely without some major bodies, including Crosby, in the lineup for large portions of the season. Those guys are all back now. Guys like Crosby, obviously, guys like Brian Dumoulin, John Marino, Jake Gensel, of course, back in the lineup. They're presumably healthy. I'm sure learn a little bit more about just how up to speed Gensel is starting a training camp, hopefully this Monday in Pittsburgh. But I think that's the thing that everyone is really looking forward to, is to seeing this group, which we have not seen, I think, for one game, honestly, this year, guys, where the Penguins had a full lineup as far as what they projected to be the guys that would be in their NHL roster. And it was a game that they didn't even last the entire contest with back on November 2nd against the Edmonton Oilers. They had a couple injuries as that game rolled on. Now, of course, you talk about what they've done to supplement some of the players that were out of the lineup. And, of course, there were some moves made up front with guys like Patrick Marleau coming in, Connor Sherry coming back, Jason Zucker acquired from Minnesota. So they've added a lot of, punch to their forward group in the absence of some of these players that were out. So now these guys coming back, you get to mold them all together. It'll be kind of in a warp speed type of fashion for Mike Sullivan and his staff to do it on the ice. I know they've been doing a lot of video and coaching of that nature from a distance. But now as they get the little bit more hands-on aspect, it'll be interesting to see how it all comes together. But they certainly have a pretty formidable group on paper, and I think a lot of people are excited to see how it'll play out in real time.
Hosted play-by-play voice for the Pittsburgh Penguins, Josh Getzoff with us here on Sportsnet 650. Josh, your thoughts and the reaction in Pittsburgh to this matchup against the Montreal Canadiens? Because around the league, certainly when you look at teams that if you wanted to say didn't deserve to be in this playoff format or get a second life that they wouldn't have had otherwise because it's going to be a 24-team format, the Canadiens and the Blackhawks are the two teams that jumped to the top of that list. How do people in Pittsburgh look at this matchup? Are they expecting the Penguins to roll over the Canadiens, or is there a little bit of worry with Carey Price on the other side?
I think that you have a little bit of both of those aspects that you mentioned right there. First of all, I think when the matchups were first announced, More Penguins fans were annoyed just to see the fact that the Flyers had finished in front of them based on points percentage and points overall. So that was the first thing that irked them. Then when they saw the matchup, and I think they realized that it was going to be Montreal and a team that, you know, they finished, what, 15 points clear of when the season paused back in mid-March, that kind of, I think, ruffled some more feathers as well. But I think when you look at the matchup on paper, obviously the Penguins, the points aside, they're a better team, they're a deeper team, and they should have their way, and I think most people are expecting that to happen in this series. But to your point about Carey Price, you mentioned the Canadiens in a playoff series and a goaltender in a playoff series against the Penguins, and people start to get a little nervous around here because back in 2010, it was Yara Halak that stood on his head and knocked the Penguins out when the Canadiens were an inferior team to Pittsburgh that season. So, obviously, Carey Price is in another planet compared to Yara Halak. So, if he gets into his kind of a role, who knows what he's capable of. But I think he will have to be at that level for Montreal to have a chance because, you know, positionally, it's a pendulum that swings pretty heavily in the Penguins' favor, with the exception, of course, of the goaltender.
How do you see the goaltending situation playing out for the Penguins? Obviously, Tristan Jarry had great numbers this year. Seemed like he had, to a certain degree, unseated Matt Murray as the starting goaltender, or at least there was a split. Is it, you know, a fait accompli that it's going to be Tristan Jarry starting game one of the playoffs, or where do you think that situation goes?
Actually, guys, I think it's going to be Matt Murray in game one, and that's mainly because of the work that he's done in the postseason. Mike Sullivan, whether he will tip his hand to this or not, he has an affinity for Matt Murray and has always kind of been in his corner to make him, you know, want him to be the guy that is the number one, I guess you could say, for the Penguins. I think Tristan Jarry has put a lot of doubt into that aspect here over the last, you know, handful of months before things paused. He was obviously an all-star. He had a career season for what he was able to do for the Penguins. And I think at times, there was no question that he was the better goaltender of the two. Now, I do think that Matt Murray will be the guy when the Penguins take the ice in game one against Montreal. I do not think that means that it's Matt Murray's net to stay in. I think that he will be on somewhat of a short leash. You know, last year, obviously, a lot of people have the salty memory of the playoff performance by the Penguins, which was not a Matt Murray single act. That was a full team disappointment, but a sweep at the hand of the Islanders that was not pretty by any stretch of the imagination. So I think it's worth mentioning in defense of Murray that, you know, as the season kind of progressed there, he did hit a bit of a rut around the American Thanksgiving holiday. But after that, pretty much after, you know, Christmas break on, he was a much different goaltender for the Penguins. And he did get them a win in that final game against New Jersey before the break, or before the pause, I guess you could say. And I think that he will probably be the guy for the Penguins in game one. But you know what? I also am of the opinion that you have two guys in there that could potentially be number ones. I don't necessarily think both will be on the Penguins roster come next season for obvious reasons. They're both restricted, both, I'm sure, want to be a number one goaltender. So it's a good opportunity for both of these guys, if they get that chance to get in net, to not want to give it up. So the biggest beneficiary of that, of course, will be the Penguins. And I do think it'll be Murray in game one. But again, like I said, I just feel that the leash will be fairly short as far as if any kind of questionable goals get by him.
Josh, I do want to touch on something that's kind of outside of the series, though, because I'm fascinated with the Penguins and how they've acquired some of their assets, especially on the blue line. And they've been, you know, willing to take some chances and being more aggressive. And I'm talking in particular, I've used these two guys as examples, as Marcus Pettersson and John Marino, of kind of going outside the box, willing to take some risk and seeing high reward from those opportunities. When you look at how this front office approaches, you know, willing to take, you know, low risk, high reward bets, is that something, a philosophy that bears out elsewhere in the roster, or is that just something internally that they try to do?
Yeah, I think when you have you know, a team that's towards the ceiling, with as far as the cap is concerned every year, you have to kind of take those gambles and hope that some of these, you know, lower rate players, as far as their pay is concerned, will pay off and become players playing way above their pay grade. And, you know, that's happened with a couple guys in the Penguins organization prior to the John Marinos and Marcus Pettersons of the world. Justin Schultz comes to mind. He's an unrestricted free agent this summer, and I'd be shocked if he comes back, mainly because – of what he's been able to do since coming to Pittsburgh and proving that he was that kind of defenseman that people expected him to be when he, you know, signed with the Oilers way back when. He's been a guy that has dealt with some injuries the last couple of years, but prior to that, I think was, you know, a formidable top four, top three defenseman on this Penguins team, and a guy, you know, right-handed shooting, puck-moving defenseman with some offensive ability that, well, I would believe be pretty highly coveted when he hits the free agent market later on, whenever that will be, this fall, I guess we could say, which sounds weird to say. But, you know, you talk about John Marino, Marcus Pedersen. The other aspect to that is the Penguins didn't really give up a ton for either of those guys. So I think when you take that low-risk perspective, you're not necessarily burning yourself if it doesn't play out. In John Marino's case, you know, he was in a situation where he could have gone back to Harvard and then potentially entered the free agent pool if he didn't sign with Edmonton, and anyone could have taken a stab at him. And the Penguins, you know, they had some scouts in the area, Scott Young, Kevin Stevens, the former Penguin, you know, both heavily scouting John Marino when he was at Harvard, and really felt like he didn't get a lot of attention because of how good Adam Fox was. They both were on the same team and the same blue line with that Harvard team last season. And I think that they felt like that was maybe a bit of a diamond in the rough play for the Penguins. And all Jim Rutherford gave up was a sixth-round pick for John Marino. So you have him another year after this on his entry-level deal, and he's obviously morphed into a really impressive young defenseman, still only 23, and obviously logging his first bit of NHL action. And then Marcus Pedersen, that was a situation where I don't think anyone necessarily thought that he was the better player in the deal at first, when you trade away a prospect like Daniel Sprong, who just never really found his way in Pittsburgh. And now, you know, hindsight being 2020, we've seen has not found his way in Anaheim at all, if for that matter. And I believe he's now in the Hershey organization with Washington. So he's kind of bounced around a little bit. But Marcus Pedersen, a guy that comes on board last year, first thing that jumps out to you is he is so long and so slender, but he's durable. He played 84 games last year, counting his games with the Ducks in the regular season. He led all defensemen in that category. He played all 69 games this year for the Penguins before the stoppage, and they just signed him to a five-year deal that kicks in after this season. It's pretty friendly, I think just a shade over $4 million a year. So what they've done is they look at the top end of their roster, and when you have a guy like Letang on your blue line for two more years after this one, making north of $7 million, you have Brian Dumoulin on a pretty friendly contract, who I think, in my opinion, is one of the most underrated defensemen in the NHL. And you also bring on a guy in John Marino, Marcus Pedersen, that I think allows you some flexibility for what you want to do with players deeper in your lineup, like a Jack Johnson, as far as that is concerned. Letting a Justin Schultz walk and not necessarily hurting, instead gaining cap space with guys like Marino and Pedersen in the arsenal. So I think Jim Rutherford's taken a very calculated approach to all this. He does like to make moves. We know this. Trader Jim, the nickname is no fluke. But those moves, for the most part, and he's owned the ones that haven't. There have been a handful over the last few years that have gone pretty ugly for the Penguins. But for the most part, these moves have really played out, paid off, I should say, and they've come about in low-risk situations for the most part deeper in the lineup.
He is Josh Getzlaf. You'll hear him on the broadcast when the Penguins resume play. Josh, thanks a lot, and stay safe, and looking forward to having some games return.
All right, guys. You too. Talk to you soon.
Thanks, Josh.
We go straight to Montreal now. Stu Cowan joins us from the Montreal Gazette. Stu, let's get right into this series. When the news came out that the Canadians would be playing the Penguins, the immediate reaction, was this a matchup that Canadians fans were happy about, or just happy to get a ticket to the dance?
Yeah, I think the immediate reaction was just shocked that the Canadians were actually in the playoffs, although the NHL isn't calling the first round the playoffs, they're calling it the qualifying round. But, yeah, for the Canadians, I mean, Pittsburgh, do they match up well? I mean, it's all going to depend on Carey Price. I mean, you know, you look at the Penguins, you're going to have a healthy Sidney Crosby now. You know, missed, I think it was 28 games this season with injury and surgery for that core problem he had. Malkin, the Canadians just don't have the offense to match up with the Penguins. You know, you add in Chris Letang on the blue line there. Thomas Tatar led the Canadians in scoring this season. He had 61 points. That was 36th in the NHL. And that's been an ongoing problem with the Canadians for years and years and years. They just don't have that offensive star. The Penguins have two of them. You know, it's remarkable when you think the last Canadiens player to finish in the top 10 in scoring in the NHL was Mats Naslund in 1986. So, you know, the days of the Flying Frenchman are long gone, and now, you know, the Canadiens and general manager Marc Bergevin have hitched their cart to Carey Price. That's why they give him an $84 million contract, and as Marc Bergevin likes to say, you won't get in the playoffs, anything can happen, and there's no doubt in a five-game series that Carey Price, if he's hot, could steal a series for you. But I don't think it really matters which team the Canadiens matched up with right now at this point where they are. They're going to be the underdogs, and I think they're big underdogs going into this series against the Penguins.
One of the names we hear brought up continuously around the league when it comes to someone who may opt out of this playoff format for health reasons is Max Domi because of his type 1 diabetes. I don't know if you've talked to Max or anything like that, but whether a player of that big of an impact on the team makes a decision one way or the other, and certainly you would understand if he doesn't return to play because of his health and if that's going to be a factor, that has to be something that, regardless of which way it goes, will also be a big factor in this series for the Canadiens.
Without a doubt. I mean, Max Domi has said he wants to play, which isn't a surprise, but he also said he'll listen to the medical staff and both his own personal doctors, I guess, and the Canadiens medical staff also to see, you know, not only is he a type 1 diabetic, he also has celiac disease. So he's, you know, I read his book earlier this year that just came out, and it's remarkable what he's been able to, what he goes through on a day-to-day basis just to be able to play hockey. And obviously, you know, he's in that group where COVID, you know, if he was to catch COVID, it obviously wouldn't be very good. So as of this point, we don't really know. I guess we'll get a better idea next week when training camps are supposed to officially open. Domi has not been in Brossard skating with the Canadiens practice rink with his other teammates as of yet. So, yeah, I mean, without Max Domi, I mean, he's a key player on this team. It's also, in a way, bad time for him. Also, he's a restricted free agent after this season. And, you know, with what's happened economically with the NHL and the fact that he can't play in these playoffs, it's not going to help him moving forward as far as a contract situation. But the Canadiens, as I mentioned before, you know, well, their biggest problem is just they don't have that offensive punch, that offensive star. And Max Domi is definitely a player who can make that offense go. You know, this season was a little bit disappointing compared to what he did last year. But he's a dynamic player, great vision. So if they don't have him, I mean, the odds obviously will be a lot less as far as their chances of knocking off the Penguins.
Stu Cowan of the Montreal Gazette with us here on Sportsnet 650 for a few more minutes. So going into this series, what do you think the game plan has to be for the Habs if they want to have success against a Penguins team that certainly on paper and, you know, with most projections will be the massive, massive favorite going into this series? You bring up Carey Price. He could certainly make a difference. But, you know, how do the Canadiens have to play the Penguins in order to have success?
Yeah, well, another key player for the game is going to be Philip Danault, who's become one of the best defensive centers in the NHL. Of course, you have the double-headed monster with the Penguins, with Crosby and Malkin. But Danault has in the past, has been able to shut down Crosby on occasions. But I don't think the Canadiens can sit back and try and play a defensive style and shut these guys down. The Canadiens' game is based on speed. They play a fast-paced style. They've got to go at the Penguins, I think. One thing that might be a bit to the Canadiens' advantage, the last two seasons, as disappointing as they were, the Canadiens got off to really good starts in their first 10 games when everybody had the legs and everybody was healthy and everybody was fresh, and that's obviously going to be the situation going into this series. So I would think that they can't just sit back and sort of try to play defense and shut down the Penguins. They got to try and play their fast-paced style, quick transition game, and hope that that might wear down the Penguins a little bit, make the Penguins maybe play a little bit of defense. But again, they've got a big challenge ahead of them, the Canadiens.
If this goes wrong and they lose, and you know, there's questions asked of, okay, how to start moving this forward, what are some things that could change for the Canadiens? They've obviously got this bevy of picks getting ready, but would they make any changes to their roster because that D-core is kind of getting older? What do you foresee if they get bounced?
Well, a lot of Canadiens fans are hoping they get bounced because that'll give them a 12.5% chance of getting Alexis Lafreniere as the number one pick. And I'm not joking. There are a lot of Canadiens fans who hope the Canadiens lose this series. They don't want to see them win. Alex Lafreniere would obviously be a huge boost for this team or any team that gets him with the number one overall pick. Obviously, there'd be a lot of added pressure on Lafreniere if he comes to Montreal as a French-Canadian kid, and we've seen a lot of French-Canadian players wilt under the pressure in Montreal in the past. You know, Jonathan Drouin came here from Tampa and has struggled, hasn't been fantastic since he's been here, and I think a lot of that has to do with that pressure also. The Canes were hoping that Alexander Romanov, the defenseman they selected in the second round of 2018, he's been playing the KHL. He signed his NHL entry-level contract in May, but with the new rules for the return to play, he won't be eligible to play. So he's a guy that, moving forward next season, could be a key player for this game, sort of a defensive-style defenseman. The Canes are very, very high on him. But yeah, you know, the Canes have 14 picks at this year's draft. They've had a whole bunch of draft picks in recent years. You know, Nick Suzuki is really impressive this year. He's going to have a bright future. Jesperi Kotkaniemi, a little bit of a disappointing year this year, a bit of a sophomore jinx. He also had some injuries. So there's young talent there. But at this point, I mean, for the Canes' future, the best thing that could happen to them would be to lose to the Penguins and get Alexis Lafreniere in the draft. And as I said, I think that's what a lot of Canadiens fans are cheering for right now.
He is Stu Cowan from the Montreal Gazette. You can follow him online on Twitter at StuCowan1. Stu, thanks a lot, and looking forward to seeing your work here as we get ready for return to play.
Okay, my pleasure, guys.
Thanks, Stu.
All right, that's the Canadiens and Penguins play-in series as we get ready to preview all of the play-in rounds. But we got to catch you up on some news, some drama. Is that what we're calling it?
Yeah, it's definitely drama.
All right. So shout out to Shiloh, who chimed in on Twitter, at Shiloh Smith, who's been featured on Game of Takes as well, and pointed out a very astute thing. As I mentioned, that Game of Takes is sweeping the nation. And Shiloh had to say, Game of Takes, greater than Password. And tag all of us, me, Batch, Riccio, Randeep, and put out a poll question. And look, Randeep, as he does do, he gets triggered pretty quickly, took offense to it really quickly. And, says, Password is the king, all of that. It's the GOAT. And, retweeted to get Reach Deep Nation behind this poll question, which you can go vote on, at Shiloh Smith. But should point out, Game It Takes is winning right now. It's winning.
Yeah, 55% of the vote right now. So we encourage you to go and vote. I retweeted it on my Twitter as well, at Shiloh_Smith, for the one true Sportsnet 650 competition. It's Game of Takes. You have to come on the air. You have to present an argument. You have to be well thought out.
You got to rally the realm.
In order to get chosen, you've got to have a good tweet or a text. Like, this isn't just calling in and saying the name of an athlete and, having a bunch of sound effects played. Oh, congratulations, you won because, we said five random words and you figured out what was the common denominator amongst them. Like, this takes real skill. This takes real effort. This takes real commitment. Game of Takes. Vote for Game of Takes, the one true game show on Sportsnet 650.
It's a two-front war now in Reach Deep. What are you going to do, Reach Deep? Central's coming after you. Program comes after you. You're sandwiched. Password coming up at 2:45. Dan Riccio, Randeep Janda coming up next. Dave Pagnotta on the way. Lorenzo Neal, also great former NFLer. Batch, we'll talk to you soon. It is the home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.